the UCR Podcast.
So we've certainly been fortunate these past few years to get 10 or 15 minutes with Slash here and there, and it's always great to catch up a bit, but this time was a little bit different. They reached out and they said, hey, how would you like to talk with Slash about all things Guns N' Roses? The band has two songs that were released late last year, of course, Nothing and Atlas, and there's also, as you know, an upcoming tour to discuss. So we get into a bit of all of that today, and also we talk a bit about Brian May and go back 40 years to the first GNR tour and some other stuff, but there's a quick preview of the 10 minutes that you've got in front of you. You can hear both of the new songs at the UCR website, and of course, the band's official website, GunsNRoses.com, is your destination for all things GNR. This year's touring kicks off with dates in Latin America. Those start next month, and then GNR will be here starting May 5th. It is Matt Wardlaw, and if this is your first time listening to the UCR podcast, hit the follow button wherever you're joining us from, and you're going to receive future episodes as they are released. And leave a rating and a review if you dig it. Enjoy our latest conversation with Slash of Guns N' Roses. Well, it is so exciting to get a chance to talk to you about this latest Guns N' Roses music. We've been enjoying both songs, Nothing and Atlas. And Slash, what's been interesting about this new music that's been coming out in the past decade is that Axl's been collaborating with you and Duff on songs that were around in various forms back in the Chinese democracy era, perhaps before and after that. So I wanted to start there because Zach Starkey told me earlier this week about how Pete Townsend has an ongoing process where he finds his way into the classic Who material in new and different ways each time he plays it live. And you certainly understand that. So if we look at this new music through that lens, what is the process as far as how you find your way into the music?
It's so much stuff is done without really giving it a lot of what you call serious thought. When approaching these songs that were already done, it was basically just the song itself. And going, what's my guitar interpretation of this song going to be? So it's fun for me because I get to write something to a pre-existing thing, which is calls a different set of tools than when you're just writing for yourself, right?
Yeah.
So, it was just fun because the songs themselves are great. And I just wanted to come up with some cool guitar parts. And it's not something that we can rehearse and sort of have sort of naturally evolve. You got to write whatever you're going to write and record it, and then that's going to be it. And so it's an interesting kind of a challenge. And they were done sort of piecemeal over time. Like, we didn't do them all at one time. And then so a couple here, a couple there. And these Atlas and Nothing were done. These were the last of them, of the new sort of Chinese democracy stuff. And it was the last two that we did, obviously. And they were just really cool. You know, I mean, the vibe on Nothing was something that I was really like, well, this is different, you know, for a gun song. And that's the cool thing about those songs. We weren't around for the inception of them. So some of the stuff is different than what I would have written for this part or that part. And so it's an interesting kind of project, each one of them.
Yeah, and you just spoke with my comrade Chuck Armstrong. And when these two songs came out, we were texting back and forth about how cool the guitar solos are that you played on those two songs. And you just talked about that a little bit. Like, how do you handle composition of your solos these days? And is that part of your process that has evolved?
It hasn't evolved much. The way it always has worked has been sort of like, okay, this is the section where the guitar solo is going to go. And you just go for what you know. Based off the feel of the song, the melody of the song, and so it's just inspired in the moment, and that first take is usually the one, you know. And if there's anything wrong with it, you just play the whole thing again, and it's not the same as the first one, but the idea is the same. You just want the one that flows the most naturally. But I've never understood how one could really compose a solo unless the solo and the part solo section is really composed. You know, like, if when I hear a Queen solo, I understand how that has to work with all those changes and stuff. But for the most part, we have a very simple bed for where the solo goes, and you just sort of play within the framework of that melody as it comes to you, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned Queen. Atlas has some history with one of your heroes, Brian May, and that song was on the radar for fans when they first heard it back in the day. It was called Atlas Shrugged, for people that are not familiar, and Brian May played on it. So did you get to hear that original version, and does any of Brian's work survive on what we're hearing now?
I didn't even know Brian was on the track, because had I known and had I heard it, it might have been something that I would have wanted to play off of Brian. But it just, I don't know, the final mix that I heard, I don't recall. I didn't even know this was, I knew Brian played on Chinese Democracy at somewhere, but I didn't know. And I just learned today that it's that particular song. But when I was doing it, I didn't hear anything of Brian. So I don't know if it was in the mix when I heard it or whatever. But it'd be interesting now that I know to go back and listen to what Brian did.
Yeah, it seems like you guys had a really cool time touring with him when he toured with you guys back in the day, too.
Well, I mean, he had a solo thing at one point.
Sure.
Yeah. So God, that was seems like eons ago. But yeah, I mean, Brian is one of my all-time favorite guitarists, but also one of my favorite composers. And I say composers because Queen stuff is so epic, you know. But Queen was, you know, all around one of our favorite bands. So it was an honor to work with Brian, always has been. I've worked with him a bunch of times over the years.
Well, it would have been hard for 1985 Slash to imagine that we would still be talking about Guns N' Roses here in 2026 the way we are. What do you kind of appreciate about this band and how the music has evolved through the years?
Well, I mean, I'm really appreciative of the whole thing because, you know, Guns was, this is a long, we don't have time to get into this whole history thing, but it's just, we're really fortunate that we've been, we have such chemistry together, and that even though I was gone for so long, to be able to come back together and at that spark was just there. It's sort of inherent to the combinations, the combustible thing that is, you know, our relationship musically and personally, and it's great. And so the fact that we've had fans that have stuck with us through, you know, I mean, because that's what it's all about. It's just us and them. It's not about the business. It's not about fucking, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. It's just us writing material and the audience that, you know, ingests it, right? And we've had such a great relationship with the fans this entire time. And the fact that they keep us, that we're still around. So it's all very, very, it's fun. It's inspiring. It's creatively inspiring. The new material that's going to come up from us getting back together is going to be amazing. I mean, we have a ton of it, so I know it's amazing. So it's just great, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what fans always wonder. And you mentioning that this was kind of the last of the songs that originate from a certain era, fans are always wondering, like, you know, they just know what prolific writers you all are. So they're like, these guys have to be writing somewhere in the background of all this.
Yeah, it's always going on. But it's hard for us to stop it and just go, okay, we're gonna sit down and we're gonna make this record now. None of our records were done that way. They were just sort of spur of the moment, you know. I mean, even Use Your Illusions, which we did do a lot of pre-production for. The time we did pre-production, and a long time went by before we actually sat down and made the record. But then one day we decided, okay, we got together and put all 30 songs together in one afternoon at my house, and then went in the studio and recorded. So once it gets going, it just goes, but you just never know exactly when that moment's going to happen.
Last couple things, man. Guns N' Roses, the tour, obviously. GNR is playing these epic shows that, as fans know, often stretch past the three-hour mark. And there obviously is a level of physicality that's part of that before we even talk about some of the blistering temperatures that you guys deal with. What is kind of your method personally in pacing for playing a mammoth set like the GNR one?
There's no real rhyme or reason for that, for how you go into it. I mean, we rehearse, and you just innately know what to do when you go out on the road, and you sort of pace yourself just accordingly. I don't know. There's not a ritual or anything for me. We start rehearsing, we get the set together of some sort of bunch of songs is all it is. We just like run through 50 songs and then hit the road, and you just do it. And we managed to go out there for a pretty long fucking time. So there is some durability there. But I guess, you know, you subconsciously know what your limitations are. So, you know, how late you can, you know, you don't really think about it, but you know, if you have to get up the next morning and travel to a city and you've got a show that day, that, you know, if staying up till 5 or 6 in the morning is not really necessarily conducive. So, you know, you just sort of like, without thinking about it, sort of know how to do it.
Yeah. Well, this is the last thing, man. And we're going to go with a road story, 1985 slash I mentioned him. And I just wondered, like, you mentioned you've been doing it for a long time and you learned a lot of things as you're doing it. What are kind of the memories that stick with you about the first time that this band went on the road, West Coast tour, June of 1985? You guys had a schedule that went from Sacramento to Seattle. And I imagine you probably learned a lot on that run that has kind of stuck with you to this day as far as what to do and what not to do.
Well, I know not to take a beat up Oldsmobile and attach it to a U-Haul and try and drive across the Pacific Northwest because the car broke down in short order. And we actually hitchhiked with our guitars on the highway from Fresno to Seattle. So that was our first road trip. I think that was really, not knowing it at the time, but that really solidified us as a group. And we only made one date out of all those shows. And Duff had booked them because he was familiar with all the venues in the Pacific Northwest. But because we had a hitchhike, we missed all the shows. We got to Seattle. We did one show there on rented gear because our gear never showed up. And I learned that we can fucking take on pretty much anything.
Well, that's a great place to end. We're looking forward to this tour. Congrats on this music. Thanks always, man.
Take care, Matt. Thanks.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR Podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.